Welcome to the fansmanship.com podcast. It's Owen here. And for the first edition of the podcast in the new school year, I had Cal Poly head soccer coach Steve Sampson on to talk a little bit about the Cal Poly team this year. Steve also called some U.S. men's soccer games and some national games in Spanish language television as my dog decides to whine and say hi on the podcast. But I appreciated Steve's candor in terms of both the U.S. team and the Cal Poly team. I've said recently that there's a few sports that Cal Poly, you know, really does have a legitimate shot someday, or I guess a better chance than others at like winning a national championship. Men's soccer is one of those sports. So I talked to Steve about the upcoming season. They have a scrimmage at Loyola Marymount. It'll be tomorrow as this comes out on Sunday. And then they head on the road to play some tough games at North Carolina, Wake Forest, and also against New Mexico and Air Force. So Cal Poly men's soccer coach Steve Sampson here on the fansmanship.com podcast. Hope you enjoy. So Steve Sampson, I got in touch with you this summer to see if you wanted to join American Outlaws at the game to watch the game, and you said no, I'm going to be there. And I hadn't realized you were calling the games. What was your summer like? I mean, Copa had to be fun to follow the U.S. team around and see some of those games. What was your summer like?
It was a summer full of soccer with the European Championship and with the Copa America, and I had an opportunity to work for Football y Primera and to do commentary. Color commentary in Spanish,
right.
In 100 different markets here in the United States, Central America, and Australia. And so I had the opportunity to do the game up in Santa Clara between Colombia and the United States.
I was there.
And then I got to go to Pasadena to do the Brazil match. Then I went to Chicago to do the Costa Rica USA match, then back to Phoenix to do the Peru Ecuador match.
Nice.
And I flew up to Seattle to do the United States Ecuador match, and then back down to Santa Clara to see Mexico get torn apart by Chile 7-0.
You were at that one.
I was at that game, and there was 65,000 Mexican fans there, and I think I witnessed the worst loss in Mexican national team history. And so I just thought that it was an absolute clinic on the part of Chile. But to be in and amongst that in those environments and to do color commentary with Andres Cantor, who works for Telemundo.
And I know that name.
One of the top Spanish announcers in the country, if not the best. And then I was working with Carlos Valderrama, the star from Colombia, and Carlos Hermosillo, the leading goal scorer for the Mexican national team, and a lot of other stars working side by side with, Fox and Landon Donovan next to us in the next booth over. And then the next booth over was the president of the United States Soccer Federation, Sunil Gulati, and Tom King, who works there. And so it was just a fantastic summer for me.
I don't know how much of that you've done in the past in terms of color commentary or being around the national team. Is that something that you've done kind of off and on since you were the coach there? Or is that something that it was more than that this time?
Yeah, the best decision I ever made was taking Spanish in high school and making it my minor in college. So it served me well when I became the national team coach of Costa Rica. But since I left the Galaxy in 2006, I worked for Time Warner Deportes. Okay. Uh-huh. So every week we were doing the Galaxy game when they played the other MLS opponents in Spanish every single week. And then I've been invited over the last, 8 or 9 years, whenever the United States plays Mexico in Mexico, to be a color commentator for Televisa in Mexico City.
Okay.
The Spanish language has really served me well.
Yeah, and obviously you're comfortable enough to do it throughout. You're like the the other side of the Joe Tatino, Kobe Jones. You kind of did that.
That's exactly right.
In Spanish.
That's exactly
okay,
right.
I can definitely picture that. I also this summer listened to. I'm kind of a consumer of podcasts too, and I follow your former player Alexi Lalas. I listened to your guys's conversation, and it was like one of the most entertaining, honestly. Like I want to say satisfying as like a U.S. soccer fan. It was a very kind of satisfying conversation to listen to in terms of having some. I thought it was a really great discussion. I think Alexi, phrases things, and he comes into conversations like that with a really good attitude about it, and kind of coming from the right place. Maybe, what was that like? Kind of leading up to it. How did you guys kind of decide to get together, and what was that like?
Well, when I was called by his producer to see if I would have any interest to do it, I said sure. I mean. You know, I really never had an opportunity to really discuss in detail what surrounded the leading up to and during the 1998 World Cup, and Alexi was giving me a platform to do that. I think he was very fair in giving me the opportunity to explain myself. He in turn made it clear that he would have done a number of things differently, which I thought was admirable. But then the follow-up podcast, where I didn't have a chance to respond.
I didn't listen to that one.
Yeah, the follow-up podcast was where, you know, he gave some postscript commentary, which basically said that, well, you know, I gave Steve the opportunity to say what he wanted to say, but I disagree with his decision about John Harkes, and he should have just played the best players regardless of the situation.
Oh, okay.
So, you know... he obviously had control of the airwaves at that point. Didn't give me an opportunity to respond to his postscript podcast.
Right. It was more like he gave you a chance to say your piece,
right.
And was kind of okay with it. Like he didn't respond to it either way as you were saying it.
Correct.
And then came back. Okay.
I mean, the real issue was that that he felt that regardless of what John Harkes did,
right.
that I should have selected the best players to play in a World Cup. Well. I apologize. Actually, I don't apologize. I'm a principled individual, and I think 99.9% of all the other professional coaches out there would agree with me that you can't cross over certain lines,
sure.
And that there are principles to be played by, sure. And I stand by my decision.
Yeah, and team sports is weird. I say that sometimes. You know, team sports, there's a lot of stuff that goes into team sports in general. I mean, you know, whether it's basketball or soccer or even baseball, where it's really an individual team sport, stuff like that can really, make a huge difference, obviously. So
I am not a believer. I am not a believer in winning at all costs. I'm a believer in winning, but not at all costs.
Got it. What do you think about the current state of the U.S. national team? I went to that Colombia game, and I was like, oh, my God, it was like my indoctrination, I felt like, on some level into, like, being a U.S. soccer fan, just in that there were a few chances, but, man, like, it was just – they didn't seem like they could get it together. And I was sitting, obviously, watching the game from as good an angle as I'm sure you were. The rest of the Copa, they kind of acquitted themselves all right in terms of the actual result, but – process-wise, where do you feel like the national team's at right now?
Well, it's a question that I've been asked a lot in the last 3 or 4 months because I have a very interesting perspective on things. And
well, yeah, you're one of probably like four people that could have the perspective that you have. Yeah,
I believe that we have developed more good players here in this country over the last 15, 16 years, but we've done... I believe, a very poor job in developing incredibly special players. And those are the special players that you need, to get to semifinals on a consistent basis at the World Cup level. And if you look at the four teams that were in the Final Four or in the semifinals of the last World Cup in Brazil, Germany, Holland, Argentina, and Brazil...
Yeah,
you can look at each one of those, and you can say, "Okay, Argentina, had a Messi. The Netherlands had a Robins. Germany had a Müller and an Özil. And then of course Brazil had Neymar.
Yeah.
So these are special players that can take the game on their shoulders, and whether it's against one or two or even three players, find a way to do something special to impact positively an outcome in a game. We don't have those players yet. And I think, you know, as our professional league develops and gets better, as we start playing against better competition at the national team level, and we're doing that.
Sure.
But we cannot continue to miss out on qualifying for Olympic Games and not do well at the under 20 and under 17 levels. I mean, we have to continually qualify for those events to give those players the opportunity to have those experiences, because eventually those dividends are paid out with the national team level.
Is it an impossible task to, being that the U.S. is so large and spread out, and, you know, I had a great conversation or two with your predecessor, or one of your predecessors here, Paul, who's your mm-hmm. he talked a lot about, you know, what they do in Holland and what they do in other places in terms of you know, focusing on a certain style, etc. Is it an impossible task in the United States with how many different people with different levels of experience are coaching 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12-year-olds to actually kind of get everybody moving in a certain direction? Is being like the technical director essentially of the U.S. national team, is that like one of the more impossible jobs, or what's your viewpoint there?
Having been the technical director of the United States, I think you know, the United States is not a country, it's a continent,
right?
And things are done differently in the Midwest than they are in the East, than they are in the South, than they are in the West. And the reality is that we could have four national teams at every level. In fact, I have proposed that, that we literally have sub-national teams at every single level in each region of the United States.
To give guys a chance to kind of cohesion and play with each other.
Well, to give more players more experience, you know, to be coached by great coaches, to be exposed to great competition.
Right. You said coached by great coaches. Is having great coaches an issue in the United States right now, you think? Like across the board?
Well, I'm a firm believer that American coaches can coach anywhere in the world and have success. We just have to give them the opportunities.
Okay.
But having said that, you know, I do believe that there are coaches out there that have incredible resumes, not just playing resumes, but playing and coaching resumes that we haven't taken advantage of.
Okay.
And too often we rely on a player who has been an exceptional player that hasn't had any experience coaching or managing players or group settings, you know, and expect them to get the same kinds of results. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, I got to believe that coaches who have been also very good players that have a lot of coaching experience. For example, a Jason Kreis would be a very good example. Right. A Jason Kreis has been an exceptional player. And I think he's had great success at Real Salt Lake. And I think he's one that should be considered to coach our national teams at some point. You know, because one, he's an American and he's got all the background and he's been under fire as a coach. I mean, he went from Salt Lake to New York, and that's a different animal. And after 1 year he was fired, and it could have easily been expected. And because the expectations there are so, and the standards are so much higher than other parts of the country, and, you know, and so I think he's the one candidate that I would like to see get a shot. Certainly, Caleb Porter at Portland Timbers.
Right.
He's coached collegiately. He's
Akron,
now coached at Akron. Yep. Correct. He won a national championship there. Beautiful style of soccer.
Right.
Won an MLS championship with Portland last year, and you know, I think he is one that is setting himself up really well to at some point be our national team coach.
Do you think we're at the point now? I mean, I read an article the other day about and obviously you follow MLS, you follow what's going on. Oscar Pareja is a coach. I wrote for like a year for a blog for FC Dallas, just kind of randomly to give myself some soccer experience, and really enjoyed. I think it was like 3 years ago when Mauro Diaz first came up to their team. I really, for whatever reason, I really enjoyed watching his teams play, the counterattacking style that they play, and the way that he gets a lot out of the young players that he has. I read an article that like he might be a really good player or coach because he's developing. You know, the FC Dallas system has really developed a lot of good players as well.
Well, plus Pareja, I think has a great playing history, but he also is now, I think FC Dallas is on top of the tables.
Totally.
His U18 and U16 academy teams won both national championships all in the same year. First time in MLS history.
Yep.
He has a great relationship with Fernando Clavijo,
who is the technical director
of FC Dallas. And when I was the assistant coach under Boran Milutinovic, Fernando Clavijo played for the national team in the 94 World Cup. So I know Fernando very well. And, okay. and what I love at that organization is that there is this vertical integration that allows for commonality philosophy from top to bottom. Okay. And everyone is buying into it, and now you can see the results. So yes, I agree with your assessment. I think he'd be a great choice.
Great. So let's get into Cal Poly. What have you learned in the last 18? Has it been 18 months now? I'm trying to picture when we sat in this room and you got introduced as the new coach. What have you learned? What's been different in terms of college soccer now versus college soccer when you were coaching before?
First of all, I got hired in December of 2014. So
more than 18 months.
You can do the math there.
Yeah. 20.
I feel like there is a lot more parity in the college game. I think there's also a lot more bureaucracy with the game, and that's really an unfortunate thing. Compliance oversight is meticulous. And it just seems to be an enormous amount of paperwork and follow through and justification, you know, and a lot more rules than when I was previously a college coach. But having said that, I'm really enjoying myself. I think we are definitely headed in the right direction. The team keeps improving year after year. This is an important year for us, you know, to continue showing that we're showing growth, but I think a lot of teams now, I mean, we can't sneak up on anybody now. You know, I mean, we just lost 2-1 in the final seconds against the number one ranked team in the country. And so we're not going to surprise North Carolina or Wake Forest anymore. And so we're going to see legitimate efforts against us. And that's what I want for our players. I really want to play the best. In order to be the best, you got to play the best. And I want to get results playing against the best. And so, you know, the administration here has been very supportive of me doing that. I've enjoyed the players that have come into this program. Unfortunately, we had four great players leave last year, but now is an opportunity for others to step up. I think we have a great freshman class. I mean, we had five or six freshmen on the field against Stanford last night that are very encouraging. And will form the foundation of a very, very, very good Cal Poly team going forward. So, I mean, I love the area. I do think at times it is difficult with the academic standards being so high, but I feel challenged by that. And I actually love working with very intelligent players. Sometimes it's difficult to get in a borderline player. And you know what? To be honest, it should be. But if Stanford can win a national championship with very high academic standards, we should be able to as well. So, you know, I can't use that as an excuse. You know, but it does somewhat narrow our focus on who we can recruit.
So recruiting's probably been like the biggest. I mean, you obviously had a picture for the recruiting landscape being, you know, club stuff and other things. But has it been like a little bit? I don't know what's been different about it, or what's surprising, I guess. Has there been anything about it that's been surprising?
So, for example, every year you probably have somewhere of a turnover between 4 to 8 players.
Right.
So if we had 1,000 players in our ID camps this last year at Cal Poly over 5 camps.
Okay.
And if you're out and you're going to Indianapolis and you're seeing all the academy teams playing in Indianapolis and you follow up by going to Florida in December and seeing the academy teams there, and then you go to the national championships in June in Dallas, and you're evaluating, let's say you have on your depth chart anywhere from 200 to 300 players and you have to narrow it down to 4 to 8.
Right.
That's a very, very difficult process. Right. And one where it isn't just about playing ability. It has a lot to do with character. Has a lot to do with you know, the four walls around them that they bring here to Cal Poly, you know, parent, family, support systems, and whether they have the kind of character and background that we want here and a player that I want to spend the next 4 or 5 years with. And so vetting all of that in addition to their playing ability. And I don't like to just go watch a player play once. I mean, you have to see them play
right
over an extended period of time.
I think especially in soccer, like, you know, in a basketball player, you can kind of go and get a decent idea, of, you know, after a game or something. But
how about going and watching a player and in the first 10 minutes he gets a red card, you know, and you spend all that money to go watch him play and he gets the jet. Or worse yet, or maybe not worse, we're just as bad, where a coach doesn't play him for whatever reason because he wants to give him rest for the next game.
Yeah.
You know, so you have all of these factors.
On some level, if he knows you're coming and he gets a red card, that's something.
Yes, yes.
I coached a kid in high school in Florida who knew that a college was coming to see him and happened not to show up for school that day. So he couldn't play in the game that night. So guess what?
Well,
you know, that college went home.
What does that tell you about,
precisely,
you know, his ability to make good decisions?
Right.
You know, and you know, I... Here we have the wonderful train in the background of San Luis Obispo.
It legitimizes the fact that we're actually doing this at Spanos. Yeah.
It adds character to the podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole process of, first of all, getting back into the college game and discover, all right, where is the talent in this country? What's the best fit for Cal Poly, academically, socially, athletically?
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. But... you know, I enjoy that part of the process.
Great. Obviously, those four guys you mentioned, Matt LaGrassa, Kip Colvey, Chase Minter, and Wade Hamilton, all are playing professionally. All have gotten, like, significant number of, like, USL starts. Kip and Wade have made their debuts in MLS. And Matt last week finally got to start for Sac Republic and was one of the players of the week. I watched that game and it was deservedly so in terms of you know, his work rate from the midfield out there. Have you got a chance to watch them at all? And what are your thoughts? I know they're not guys that you recruited, but when you came in, I mean, they were your leaders last year and probably mean something to you to see them do well.
Yeah, I didn't recruit them, but prior to my coming to Cal Poly, the captains hired me.
Okay.
For their captain's camp every year. And so I spent a week with them and got to know them really well and to appreciate who they were. And I actually was the one that identified Chase Minter in Dallas and encouraged Paul Holliker to take a look at him, and he did, and ended up coming and doing quite well, obviously, here at Cal Poly.
Yeah.
So I feel like I had a little bit of a part to play in his arrival here.
For sure.
But, you know, it is enjoyable for me to put my own spin on things. I love the guys that I have here, even though I haven't recruited them. But for me to place my own spin on the type of player that I would like to have come to Cal Poly and for people to maybe see what the future might look like. Yeah. Well, this is my first recruiting class, my first real recruiting class.
Totally.
And I think we've got some outstanding young men.
There's a lot of freshmen out there who are playing real well, including the left back, whose name
Eddie
is
Melgosa.
Eddie. I mean, he just looks super cool back there. The more I kind of thought about the game and him, and then the kid who played in the U-17.
U-19 national team, Christian Enriquez.
Christian Enriquez. Those guys both look, you know, super polished. Yeah. It's you know, anyway, there's a lot of freshmen out there. Is it possible you have like 10 freshmen coming in? Is it possible that, I mean, I know with so many freshmen, expectations, maybe you want to kind of temper, you know, how are these young kids gonna do things? You know, how are they gonna react when you get to play in North Carolina and some of these great teams? But you know, is it possible that the depth of this team, with, you know, needing depth in college soccer in terms of the free substitution rule and everything else, is it possible that with added depth comes maybe potentially even better results than last year?
Well, I hope so. There are some freshmen here that we will redshirt, and I've been very honest with them up front that I, you know, with a few of these guys, they need a year of development just to get a feel for the speed of play at the college level. Also, to give them a firm foundation academically is really important. But so there will be 3 or 4 of our freshmen, maybe even as many as 5 that will redshirt. But you know, the guys like a Christian Enriquez or an Eddie Melgoza, these guys who have great experience and great maturity, and you know, these are the guys that will be able to step in and hold their own and do quite well and provide that added depth, not just depth, but starting minutes, you know. And then on top of that, we have other players that I really believe that are going to grow very quickly over the course of the season. And, you know as well as I do that some will step up and do exceptionally well. Others will just barely survive, and they just need another year of maturity. But right. Eventually, I would expect all these guys to do really well.
Awesome. And one thing I noticed in your guys' first two games, the scrimmage that you had and the exhibition against Stanford, was kind of I thought the transition play was sharp for whatever reason, you know, getting behind the ball when Stanford was, you know, was possessing it, and then being able to counterattack really, really quickly. And that was something that, that I haven't seen as much of, and maybe it's early, maybe guys have fresh legs, but, what are some other things that fans can kind of look for this year in terms of keys for you, for your team? Obviously you're not going to give, you know, your whole scouting report away, but you know, what are some things that maybe are tangible? Sometimes hard to see tangible things if you're a soccer fan, you know, in terms of if they're doing this, the coach is going to be happy. What are one or two of those maybe tangible things that you can see, as a Cal Poly fan to watch for this year?
Well, people have to realize that we had played Stanford after having only trained in preseason for 7 days. So what that tells me is that, one, the new guys coming in were taught well at the youth level. The guys that were returning have an understanding of the concepts and my expectations of how we want to play. I think we have a great battle between Eric Cam and Simon Boehm for the starting goalkeeper role. I think Adam Olsen at the right back has fit into that role. He comes forward beautifully, scored a great goal last night. But I think mostly his ability to play out of the back,
right?
Which, you know, with Kip having left, we were very concerned that we were able to fill that. Cody Wakasa, as our captain in the back line, continues to be, I think, one of the best defenders in the country. Who we partner with him is a bit of a concern. You know, Tony Samaika did really well, I thought, last night until he got a little bit of a hamstring issue. Our left back, Jack O'Connor, was he and Noah Chepleski last year were pretty much the two guys that split that role, but I've noticed over the winter and spring that Jack feels a lot more comfortable playing higher up the field. I mean, that's his natural position as a left winger. And so to find a left back and Eddie Melgoza, you know, and then Nick Carroll, you know, has come back into the squad and has really paid his dues and is doing quite well in training. And so I wouldn't hesitate putting him there either. Yeah. The midfield, Bjorn Sandberg, Ruben Duran, Joe Bullis, Christian Enriquez, we have solutions now, and we have depth in the midfield. And then when you add guys like Diego Alonso, you know, who plays for the San Jose Earthquake Academy program, very technical player, very sharp. And then you add a guy like a Kenny Higgins, right, you know, who is such a fireball.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, we have a guy that's returning into the squad, Brett Foreman, you know, who can play in the midfield as a holding midfielder or play as a center back.
And maybe you haven't got a chance to see Brett as much, right, because he's been hurt so much.
That's right.
He looks in really good shape, too.
He looks great. Yeah. And I just love his mentality and his approach to life, quite frankly. And he just has – he's a fighter. He gets the job done, and he does it with just such great enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And then you have guys like, you know, Justin Dillon, who were just, you know, praying that he stays healthy. But I think he's such a technical player, such a creative player. Unfortunately, he had an ankle injury, couldn't play against Stanford. I really think that, to be honest, if we'd had him on the field, we could probably could have won, probably should have won the game, and probably could have won the game regardless. But I think he'll be ready to go for North Carolina, and so we're anxious to see how he does. So, you know, look, it's a team that we want to have the ability to possess the ball. Right. We want to be able to play through the midfield. We want to have players who are willing to make runs in behind defenses, knowing that they're going to get the ball. And if they don't get the ball, that they're disciplined enough and passionate enough and have enough energy, you know, to where if they're not making runs for themselves, right. they're creating space for others. Right. And I think we're starting to see that now. One of the problems we had last year was our inability to make great runs in behind defenses and certainly great vertical runs
right.
in behind defenses. And I think we're starting to see that. A guy like Kaba, for example,
yeah.
he's improved tremendously.
He's built for that.
And he is built for that.
Yeah. One of the playing soccer for me, one of the most fun times was playing like an indoor soccer league where there was free substitutions. and one of the things that I loved about it is I could just go all out for like 3 minutes because I'm a big guy. I just go all out for like 3 to 5 minutes and then there's free subbing. You know, I just, you know, tap somebody in like hockey and off they would go and I could rest, recover for 3 minutes and then get back on. Not that soccer is necessarily meant to be that way, but the free substitution and having depth, I mean, that's something you have to do is be able to run hard one way and then run hard the other way to get back, right? I mean, in the college game, maybe transition wise, it seems like it's kind of built for being able to do that more, especially if you have depth on your team.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
I know.
Of making
neither am I.
Large substitutions yeah. or even the free substitution right. rule. Right. I think the NCAA needs to progress to maybe 7 total substitutions in a game. And once you're off, you're off.
And to be clear, I'm good. I'm with you on that. Yeah. But as they are, as it stands, it's helpful to have the depth.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, it's like anything else. Right. I mean, you got to work within the rules right. That you have and take advantage of those rules.
Right.
You know, I noticed that Jeremy Gunn with Stanford was making 3 or 4 substitution changes at once.
Right.
I'm not a huge fan of that. Right. Everyone has their own style.
Right.
I'm not one that makes a lot of likes to make a lot of changes in the back line.
No.
Because I love the continuity and consistency between our goalkeeper and our back line.
Okay.
And if I see that we have great rhythm in the game, why change things up, right? If we're continually getting in behind defenses and creating goal-scoring opportunities, why change things up? Now, I like to read the game and then inject certain players' abilities into the game if I feel that they could do something positive for us. And so every minute of the game, I'm assessing exactly what the needs are. And the nice thing about it with this team is I believe that we have so many of those tools that we can use at any point in time in the game.
Excellent. Coach Steve Sampson, Cal Poly men's soccer plays this Sunday at home against LMU. I think that's a 5 o'clock start. And then goes on the road. First games that count are at North Carolina, at Wake Forest, 2 top 10 teams, maybe top 5 teams, top of the ACC for sure out there. And the ACC is probably the best soccer conference in the country. Comes back towards home, but not quite home yet the next weekend in New Mexico to face New Mexico and also Air Force, I think, before coming home for their home, their the first game at home that counts the following weekend. So you guys will be home in about 3 weeks and a lot can happen between now and then. So good luck on the road and good luck developing these young guys and getting towards the season.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate the opportunity.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up to bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. Love can't find my way around Trouble Town. Ooh. Ooh.
the signs out.